Okay, so fun. This is, I don't know how this happens every single class. It's like, what, how are we at module 10 already? It's madness. Madness. Really good to see you. We're going to talk a bit about sort of generally wrapping up the program together today. A couple of admin notes I've got for you. We've got our closing circle next week, 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. usual times. You will need to prepare for this. So I'll send you an email today. The reason is that everyone gets to speak at the closing circle. It's an opportunity to reflect on where you're at, how you're feeling, all of that. We want to do an intentional closing, right? So, generally speaking, we're not great at endings in our culture. For some reason, we kind of see endings always as a bad thing or something to kind of avoid. So, we're going to do that differently. The reason to do a proper closing circle where everyone speaks is, you're going to have clients that end their work with you. And if you can get comfortable with closing in an intentional way, you're going to spread out the endings are okay. Endings can be really beautiful and really respectful. So for any of you who, like me, have kind of grown up doing an Irish exit where you just leave quietly out the back door and don't tell anyone you're going. Or you've just not quite got to grips with endings, then this can be a really lovely experience. So I will be sending you some information about what to prepare so that you can know that you will be speaking at the closing circle. Everyone will get an opportunity to share. You don't want to do that on the fly because your nervous system will be all jangled. So do make sure you give yourself the gift of some preparation time for that. It's only 5 to 10 minutes, but each. But I think it's important that you can be present for that. Okay. Next thing to let you know of is the certification call. So a couple of weeks after we end the closing circle, we're going to meet on the 14th of November. Everyone will get together at 5 p.m. This will be recorded, but I'll take you through the certification process. So if you've got any questions at all or anything, bring them to that. But I'll take you right through the whole thing so you can see what happens with that. And on the last Thursday of the month, we have supervision and support calls. So you'll be invited to November's call, which happens whatever the last Thursday of the month is in November. That's the one. And they're at 10 and 5 as well. Okay, so same class times. You can come to either call. So I'll send you more information about the supervision support calls, but you can come to those from November onwards. So yay, good times. We're having our next one this week actually. So you'll be getting to come to November's call. All righty. So any questions at all on those admin points? Are you're all good? Okay. So let's talk about today's call. We're just going to revisit the aims of this module, and we're going to talk a bit about Prochaska and De Clemente's change cycle and how that helps us to sort of bring together SBCA. And I also want to share with you like how you can use this program generally to bring to come together into an actual coaching offer for more of a longer term coaching offer. And any questions you have? Anything that you've got. So coaching with the client's dreams and goals, we're holding true that there's no ideal right or linear process to achieving goals. Hannah's asked a couple of great questions in the discussion forum on this module about using goals and to kind of, using this process of courage-based goals to help clients feel that satisfaction of achievement. And we've been talking a little bit about things like all or nothing thinking. How do you use this to develop good habits, and where might you kind of, you know, where might clients fall down a little bit with this? You know, and a lot of it is this kind of indoctrination that we have, that you start here, you want to get there, then you just kind of keep going and beat yourself up along the way. And this is taking a much more of a, you know, kinder, trauma-informed approach, right, where you stick with what you can actually do, right? Because a lot of the kind of goals that are out there in the world and the way that they're coached are very much around preempting how you're going to feel on any given day. And what I'm suggesting is do it the other way around, right? Where you give yourself lots of options and then you check in on any given day and say, what can I do? And it's always going to feel a little awkward if you're a high achiever, because I'm saying start small, build momentum, do the easiest thing, right? So, but the point of that is that we're trying to help our clients feel resourced, because setbacks, challenges, self-doubt are inevitably part of any goal, right? It just will always come up. It's great. It's a great thing to be coaching on, right? You're going to have lots of work to do if you're working with clients around goals. And the meta, like, this is the thing to always kind of keep an eye on, is that we don't really care that much about the goal. We care about what the client is actually trying to achieve by that goal. What's the growth or the expansion of their self-concept that's going to be possible from realizing that goal? So it's not where you get to, but who you become, right? We become the person who can allow the result of the goal into our lives. So for us as self-belief coaches, you know, we're all about the growth, not the goals. And it's just a great thing to remember, because I think what can happen is, we talked a little bit about this last time, we get pretty excited about our clients' goals, and we can get entangled with them, especially if we might have some unconscious stuff going on where we also take a bit of responsibility for our clients' achievements, right? We see that as a reflection of how good we are, right? So it's just something to just be aware of, right? If you've got a need to be validated, don't give that to your clients, right? It's a good thing to notice. Oh, here I am getting super excited. And when the client says, oh, I don't think I want to do that goal anymore, you know, you might find yourself a bit activated by that, right? So just, that's good information. What might actually be going on here? Okay, so what we're going to talk about today, let me just pause there. Let me just check in around the courage-based goals process. Anything you're noticing? Have you had a chance to play with this yourself? Do you have any questions? Anything you want to share? Let's leave it open to you. Hannah, you've been playing with this quite a bit by the looks of things. Do you want to just maybe share what you're noticing? Oh, can I hear? Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, yeah, I did a practice pod sharing with Vicky, and I went through the questions, and then what I found at the end was I felt like I wanted to just do a check-in, like, now I've been through all that, like, is that goal still a goal? Because I think, as you know, we say about sometimes we have shoulds or like these ideas, and then I thought, like, those questions really like build it out. Yeah. Actually, it's kind of nice to be like, oh, now you've gone through that process, how does that goal feel? Because you're in quite a different place from when you first said it to when you've like gone through those questions.
Yeah. So has your goal actually changed as a result of that?
Yeah, it was nice to check that, because it felt like it was adding, yeah, a lot of different thought processes in.
Yeah, I love that you've mentioned this, because I think what I have found a lot is that clients will bring goals that that they kind of want to get a pat on the head for, not in an awful way, but it's like, isn't this a noble goal? Like, isn't this a good goal to have, kind of thing? And as you start pulling it apart a little bit, sometimes you can find that it's not quite what they're after. It's the sort of surface desire, but underneath that, there's something a bit richer and deeper. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it is. It's like, yeah, great. But you'll know as you're asking those deeper questions, both you and the client, I think, will get some insight into, is this the goal or is it something else? Is there a better way to phrase that so you're not kind of setting the client up, or the client isn't setting themselves up for that all or nothing type approach, or giving something outside of their control the power to decide whether or not they've passed or failed? Yeah, Jane.
Excuse me. Yeah, I did it and I found it really useful and interesting. What I noticed was that through the process of setting the goal shifted from being really a really clear thing, like what I want to do, to more of a sense of where I want to be or what impact I want to have. And in that shift came, surprisingly, much greater clarity of the end goal. But then but the way to get there, it was like, oh, well, I don't really know what the way is. There's lots of different things and it will be more experimental. But if I just keep in mind the general sense of travel, the general direction I'm heading in, and test all these things out in relation to that, then it just felt both much easier and clearer.
Nice. I think that's been my experience as well, is when it shifts from a doing goal to a being goal, there's more creativity available, more experimenting. And sometimes, yeah, it's less certain, but it's often more reflective of reality as well, right? Yeah, love it. Anka.
Yeah, I tried it out and I had a very slow dribble, like in the beginning, because I didn't really feel the courage for the goal. I just had the goal and I'm like, okay, let's try it out how to do it. But with the permission giving of these different rings, like these tree rings, and of me choosing which goes where, be like full permission to constantly change it, not having to do anything, I was just like jumping up doing the first thing that was doable, which I could do. Like I suddenly had a charge of energy and not the demand of the heavy load of the goal, but oh yeah, let me do one thing. That's fun. Like it was like a very different, and then the slow trickle of what ideas I had was just like flooding the page. So it was really just a life change.
That's so great. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? When we take away the should do's, and just say, what do you want to do? It totally changes the energy. Becomes much more like playful and a bit more creative. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Hannah.
Yeah, I have a question, because on the courage-based goal, like the framework sheet, the first question is kind of like, what's the goal?
Yeah.
For the next 30 days. And I was just thinking about it. It's quite like a strong start in a way. Like some people might, like when I did it, Vicky, I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm doing the next 30 days.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just thinking about if there's like how it links in with maybe a long-term person's plan, or like, yeah, just something around that, because I'm sure people can normally think of one where they're like, yeah, 30 days I'd love to be in this position, but it just, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know if it feels like there's much warm up it. So like, do people sometimes take it away and like ponder it for a bit at home, or yeah, I'm just curious about that.
So first thing that comes to mind is that's probably me being direct, because I like to be direct. So you can change this to however you fancy, right? The other thing I'd say is I would hardly ever open with the form, you know, with the goal form. We would be having some conversations with a client around, you know, what is it that they're looking for? What do they want? Does it feel like a goal? Okay, so do some thinking about that. And then we come and do the the approach of, you know, documenting the goal, writing it down. There's real power in that. So, yeah, totally. It is a strong question. Yeah. And it's fascinating to me as well how people with self-doubt, we often don't know what the goal is. We often don't know what we want. We faff about with what we want. So sometimes I think you can spend quite a lot of time having that conversation. And, you know, I have spent so many sessions with clients around goals where that we've spent most of that first session just giving them permission that it's okay for them to say out loud what they actually want. For a lot of people, it's the first time they've done that without apology, explanation, justification, all of that sort of stuff. For some folks, I think just naming it, it's like I have a vague idea of what I want, or I sort of know how I want to feel. Sometimes people are starting from the place of not this, which can be, you know, that can bring up some grief and all sorts of stuff. So all to say, yeah, meet your client where they are, change the language to suit your people, and you know, get them to write it down, like get them to buy in, you know. There's something about this process, I think, that invites people to really stand on their growth edge around actually following through. For a lot of us, we don't quite trust ourselves to follow through. And I think part of that is even just naming the goal. I don't quite trust myself to tell the truth, you know, to say it out loud. So there's something really quite daring, I think, about saying what you want. I don't know if that answers your question, Hannah, but yeah, my thoughts on it.
Yeah, more like a general.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Yeah.
I just wanted to add one thing, because what made a big difference for me was to notice that there are different parts of me that had different ideas about how comfortable and how courageous they are in terms of the goal. And so basically this image, I think, invited like all these different parts also to say, okay, we don't want to do this, like she wants to do it, but we don't want to do it, but we can put it in this ring and then we all can agree. And then as they also could share their wants or their ideas or their what they wanted to do for the goal. Like, for example, searching for pictures was one. Oh, yeah, sure, we want to search for pictures. So basically they were different. And I was more like, oh, that takes just time away. It was kind of like an inner conversation while playing with this image of the circle. So that was very helpful to have this inner, like, openness to notice the different parts in me that had different ideas about what to do.
Yeah, it's a great point, because I think what can happen is if we have any hesitation or any part of us that's going, oh, I don't know about this, or I don't feel like it, then we can think, oh, well, that then I can't do it. When actually, you know, flipping that around, well, what are the parts that do want to this goal, and what can you do, right? So it feeds into, I think, that all or nothing thinking of, unless I feel 120% ready, then I'm not going to do anything, you know? And I think actually we just need to be a bit gentler on ourselves. It's like, okay. And sometimes, you know, I've literally gone like 10% of me wants to go for a walk in the rain, but all right, that 10% of me is, and I'm going to do it pissed off, you know? But that's okay. Like, I won't die. You know, so I think sometimes, you know, we want everything to be kind of a joyous, fun experience. It doesn't have to be. You can get it done. For any business owner, you know, there's so many tedious parts of running a business, but do it and be pissed off and bored with it, you know. Yeah, Jane.
You just said, you know, be gentler with yourself. And I'm just reflecting that although I found the process really helpful and kind of generative, I have not ended up with a 30-day goal. I've ended up with what looks like a kind of 2-year
yeah.
aspiration. And also I've not ended up with one set of circles. I've ended up with two, because one is about me, my home private life, and the other one is about work, and they need to fit together, but I felt like I couldn't have one without the other. So I am kind of sitting here going, okay, it was really useful, but I've now got two massive circle diagrams,
yeah,
not one really simple, manageable.
Well, and how do you feel about having those two big ones?
Kind of daunted and excited at the same time.
Yeah.
A little overwhelmed, but yeah.
So this can happen. And for anyone who, you know, has a tendency to go big, right? Like that's totally cool. I think what I would say is if the sense of being daunted or overwhelmed starts to impinge on your ability to make progress, look for the way in, like find the 30-day goal within the bigger dream.
So make a third map.
Yeah.
Okay. A smaller one.
Yeah, but you'll love that because you like to overwork. Right. So yeah.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm kind of going, make a third map, are you sure?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing is just to pay attention to your appetite for the bigness of it, right? For some people, it's like the bigger the goal, the bigger the energy, right? So there's nothing wrong with that. What I found, though, is that sometimes that can lead to a sense of it is too much, it feels too overwhelming, in which case it's like, oh, you've just gone too big. So what's a way to bring it down to something that does feel manageable? So, you know, resistance is a really great clue as to where we're at. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. That doesn't surprise me, Jane. Yeah, Hannah.
I had another question, actually, from when I was watching your videos, and it was just something you mentioned where you said about people call it like change fatigue, or like this feeling that you're on a constant like self-improvement wheel potentially, and it just made me think about what I'm just talking about, where there's parts of you, and there might be, because I definitely felt this a few months ago, it's like there's a part of me that wants change, there's part of me that's just like, oh my god, I don't want to be on like a hamster wheel feeling like I've always got to strive for something else. And I was just curious when I heard you talk about that, like fatigue piece, just to hear a bit more about it. And, yeah, not a specific question, but just that kind of that idea of when you have those, that sort of conflicting feelings watching potentially.
So I think that's just something to really like honour for yourself, like what actually feels doable. And let me just maybe share from my own experience and see if this helps. I think because I have a tendency to kind of overwork, part of my makeup is to just keep going. Like I don't really give myself a lot of rest time or integration time. So I've had to very purposefully build in periods of integration. So I don't, for example, let myself do more than one big thing a year. So if I'm going to do some training, I'm just doing one thing. Or if I'm, you know, got something in my personal life that feels big, that's the only thing I'm doing. Like I just tend to only do one thing a year. And I then won't look for the next thing until I feel like that's integrated in some way. And sometimes that is, you know, a short period of time. And sometimes it's, you know, 6 months or so. Like I spent 18 months training as a supervisor and just went, oh my god, I'm not touching anything for 5 years. So because it was such a massive, like, you know, transformational experience. So I think it just depends on where you're at. But what I know about us as practitioners, as coaches, is that we tend to get on that treadmill of self-improvement, and it can feel like we, well, maybe maybe that's not true, but I think it can be easy to feel like you've got to stay on it to be relevant or to feel like you know what you're doing matters. And I don't think that's true. I think it's really important to pay attention to your own need for integration and rest in between. And while I am, you know, a huge advocate of goals as a way of just stirring up self-doubt and, you know, growing as a process, I think it's such a magical thing because you can't lose. When you take failure off the table, like you just keep going until, then it can be a really magical process. But I also know that not everyone loves goals, and some people aren't ambitious, and that's great, perfect. You know, so I think part of it is just about recognizing that you'll have your own needs as a practitioner. Your clients may have different needs and different approaches. And because we're not attached to goals, we're more attached to growth. That helps us to sort of, you know, stay cognizant of those differences and what people might benefit from. Excuse me. I hope that helps, Hannah. I don't know if that answered your question or your...
Yeah, no, I think it's probably my perception of goals is very like action and doingy, whereas like just even that word integration feels really nice, and then that kind of links a bit more, if you wanted to phrase it through the goal lens of like a being goal, just like capacity to sit with whatever you've learned or whatever's been going on and like just integrate more and more to you.
And you know, a lot of us will choose goals that we know we can achieve because they are playing into the parts of us that we know quite well and we feel quite comfortable in, and it can be a little edgier and serve your growth more to do things that don't come as naturally or feel like parts of you that are maybe missing. So for high achievers to have an integration goal can be a little more fun to play with, you know, how would I even do that kind of thing. I once coached with a guy who had a couple of PhDs and he was thinking about a master's, and I was just like, why? What's the point? What grows you as part of this? You know, and we realized that actually, you know, what he had a real desire to do was to drop into his body, because he lived in his head the whole time. He was really freaking smart. So I was like, maybe you know you're smart enough. Maybe you've already, you know, achieved some goals with that. Why don't you try one that's a little more edgy, that's a little more somatic, you know? And it was great for him to just play with that. So, you know, notice if your goals are a little bit like, they're a little bit familiar. They're just a different flavor of a familiar approach. That can be interesting to notice. Why does this goal feel important? Underneath some of the, you know, kind of noble values led reasons, there may also be, I know I can do this, or you know, this is going to look good kind of thing, you know. So just something I wanted to talk about today a little more is like, what does it mean to even make changes, like to create a goal, to do something different, to be someone different, to access different parts of ourselves. Like, what is it? Why is change so great? I just wanted to sort of throw that question open to you. Like, when you think about helping someone to make changes in their life, like, what is it about that feels important, valuable, exciting to you? Yeah, Hannah.
I think for me, it's like with change, you get open and more exposed to different experiences.
Yeah.
Rather than just kind of maybe living the same thing, even though, yeah. So I think that's what's interesting for me when I say change, or like different feelings, or yeah.
Yeah. Love it. Anyone else want to share? Yeah, okay.
I love the energy of aliveness, like whatever feels alive in the moment. And so often, especially as we age, people get so safe in their normalcy and they start suffering from it. And I feel like energetically they get kind of congested or like calcified in different ways and start complaining about this and that, but not allowing themselves to fluidly move again. And that often also is related to physical movement, like going for walks, doing some yoga, whatever people like breathing or like lots of the stuff also I teach. But to see then how the smiles come out like a child and how even old people start giggling or like telling stories they had long time forgotten. And it's such a big joy to be part of this, like spring coming through again, like new, fresh energy that does not have any logical or sense, doesn't make sense. It's just like, oh, that just popped up in the moment. And then there is a river flowing from that. And where that takes us is just always exciting to me.
Yeah, love that. Yeah, Jane.
Yeah, I think maybe there's some crossover with what Anka says. For me, it is things like helping people become more fully themselves. So, which is to do with being freer and less stuck. And so the growth is to do with being free maybe of some of the kind of systems and structures and cultures that keep us trapped or small or unable to be fully who we want to be. So that might encompass all sorts of different change and all sorts of different release of energy. I think definitely for me, including spiritual growth and creative growth.
Yeah, I love it.
Really good question.
Yeah, it's kind of taps into the what we even doing here, right?
Yeah, really good question.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, reflect back on your own life and where you've made changes and how, like, big and small, right, and what that actually required of you. Usually it's, you know, a lot of energy and time and sometimes money, courage, believing in something before it's here, faith in yourself, trust in yourself, sometimes faith in something bigger than you that's holding you through it, having to ask for help, having to figure it out for yourself, all of these things, right? Yeah. Yeah. There's something quite fun about that process of change that is very enlivening. Yeah, Jane, go for it.
I have reflected on the people throughout my life who've held space for me and how transformative that's been at different stages. And there's something as well about unconditional positive regard, unconditional support, but unconditionality. So when you talk about the coach kind of not being wedded to somebody's goals or not being wedded to somebody's, you know, outcomes, I think that sense of, I think there's something, I don't know why I'm talking like this morning, but I think there's something almost kind of sacred about holding space for people in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Anka.
Yeah, I also just like to add adventurous. Like I and it's giving and receiving at the same time. Like I feel like in coaching, or also like if people support me in my change, or if I support others in their change, we are together in a river. Like it's such a wonderful, like, adventurous travel with an unknown outcome, because often in coaching the goals totally changed in one session sometimes. So, and then being together in the not knowing and figuring out step by step what is like coming up and what senses, what feels like wants to break open or so, that I love this energy.
Yeah. One of the references, I can't even remember where it is, but I just want to call it out. You may enjoy William Bridges' book called Transitions. It's about 50 years old. It's beautifully written. And he talks about you know, that process of change is actually very, very sacred in lots of cultures, and that we have kind of age and stage changes where you're mentored and held, and there is ceremony and ritual, and you're supported through that process, right? In Western culture, we don't really do that very much, you know. And so he talks about how, well, it makes total sense that you would feel this discombobulation, the middle bit where you're not, you've sort of let go maybe of who you were, but you're not quite who you want to be. And so that can be quite an identity collapse or reshuffle that goes on there. It's quite an interesting process. I've talked a lot to over the years to various practitioners who've you know, experienced change that was imposed on them. So like if an identity of yours changes, like you get divorced or you become a widow or you are thrust into a new job or made redundant, right? Like these things that sometimes are big identity shifts that we maybe don't choose, that kind of change can also create an awful amount of, you know, who am I in this kind of feelings. So I always think that the change we choose can be more positive. Yeah, Jane, go for it.
Yeah, I was just going to share a little story. I'll keep it succinct, but a very good friend of mine from university had a high-powered job in publishing, and after her children were born, she decided to retrain to be a midwife, and this was long before my children were born, and I thought, what? What universe have you suddenly decided to train to be a midwife? Anyway, some years later, I had my children. Both of them were born at home, and afterwards, I just went, oh, God, I get it. I understand why you wanted to be a midwife. I understand how extraordinary that role is to be alongside somebody in that process. And anyway, it's not my bag at all. But I think that's what I'm wanting to do still here.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, Anka.
I just, when you said this with the rituals that are not part of our culture anymore, I remember I've been so many times invited when I was living in New Mexico to the dances of the tribes, like especially Santa Clara Pueblo. But they, as the whole, it's amazing. And like, for example, the change of the seasons, like spring and fall, and also the summer and winter solstice, they do dances. And it's like the little tiniest kid, baby, can just walk, and the oldest man or woman, the whole village, they are dancing together. It's freezing cold. They are naked with some, like, all these rattles and stuff on their body, like are painted all over, have all handmade, like it was a long time in preparing that they all, like, I know hundreds of people in different groups have their like special ritual clothing. Then there are old men banging the drum and special men selected to sing. They have rituals before, and they all transition from one season into the next. And then groups of elders go with groups of youngsters into the mountain for 5 days without anything. And the youngsters also get roles to be under the stars alone in a certain stone area. And they have to kind of pick up, come back with like twigs from the trees or whatever their job is. And it's so beautiful to see how just the tiniest kid and the just bent forward old person, they all march together. And it's like, and when you hear them, it's one voice. It's many voices and hundreds of rattles, but it sounds like one voice, like the whole village is one being, kind of. It's very special. And we don't have any of that.
No, we don't. We don't. We prize individualism. Yeah. You know, it was interesting for me to come from New Zealand where we're very much bicultural, and I grew up being able to speak Māori. I don't anymore. But when someone dies, we have a tangi, which is a 5-day farewell, and there is ceremony and food, and, you know, it's it's almost too much. By the end of it, you're like, oh, okay, I'm ready to go, you know? Whereas my mum passed away very suddenly 6 months after I got to the UK, and they said, well, you can kind of take the afternoon off for the funeral. And I'm like, I'm not even going to get halfway home. So it is this very interesting, like, cultural shift of, oh, wow, they really do things differently here, right? And almost like this was 20 years ago, expressions of emotion in the workplace were heavily discouraged, right? So to even share that this was happening, it was like, oh, please, you know, like, tidy that away. And I think it's just very interesting to notice, like, how we, what we might miss out on by letting go of ritual, by letting go of those, you know, those ways of marking change for ourselves. A good friend of mine is a ceremonialist, and she does, yep, the marriages and the dispatches and the babies naming and all of that jazz. But she has also done like your last bleed as a menopausal woman, to celebrate a divorce or complete a divorce, to, you know, welcome in new family members that are in-laws, like, basically any kind of way that we can bring in and mark and acknowledge that a change has happened is, you know, worthy of our time and attention. And it requires us to think bigger than just ourselves, right? Because we often, for a ceremony, we need to bring in other people. We need to, you know, publicly acknowledge that this is happening. It's quite interesting. I'm kind of interested in this generally. I'm currently, one of my very close friends is getting married next year, and they've asked me to be their celebrant. And so I'm sort of like knee deep in rituals, and it's a gay wedding, and they want to have it in a country that gay weddings are not legal. So it's a freaking nightmare, but so fun to bring that energy into, you know, an island in the middle of the Mediterranean. So yes, art and ritual, super important. So, and you know, this may seem off topic, but just start to think about, how could you bring that in? If this feels important to you, how could you bring this into your work? Right? Are there ways that you want to bring in ritual, making, ceremony, something a little bit outside of the norm that would help your clients to integrate and process changes that are happening in their lives? And you know, this can be as simple and as, you know, elaborate as you wish. One of the things that was offered to me when I worked with my first coach, and I realized that this was the work I wanted to do, and at the time I was in a corporate job, and it felt so far away from my current reality, this change I wanted to make, and she said, I want you to choose a talisman, like something, some symbol, something that represents for you the bigness of this dream. And I was like, oh, it feels like an elephant, like a big maternal elephant. Like, I love the matriarchal kind of sort of community that elephants create. Their whole process is fascinating to me. And it did. It felt like a big old elephant of a thing that I didn't really know how I was going to overcome. And I also secretly thought, and there are no elephants in the middle of London, like, so I also want to choose something that I believe I'm unlikely to see, to confirm my bias that this big dream is not meant for me. Like, I'm going to be disappointed by this. And let me tell you, there are so many elephants in London, like murals, stickers. I saw them everywhere. I can remember sitting on a tube and a kid was drawing a picture and he held it up to me and it was an elephant. I almost burst into tears. I was like, oh my God, it's happening. The universe is sending me signs. So sometimes things like that can be super fun, you know. I actually remember Ash and I walking through a National Trust woods, and they had animal sculptures in various spots, and I came face to face with like a 10-foot wooden carved elephant, and it would just give me goosebumps. It was like, oh, this, keep going, you know, that was the sense I heard, keep going, this is, it's happening, it's all conspiring around you. So you know, sometimes those little, you know, magical aspects of change, when we open up to what's possible, can be really reassuring. And for some clients, you know, it's super fun. It's all the tingles, right? For others who might be a little more straightforward and rational, that wouldn't have much meaning to them, right? So we just go with who our clients are. It's all good. It's all good. So all to say, like, I think, you know, opening ourselves up to change, making changes in our lives, saying, you know, I want this to be different. I'm going to make something happen. I think it's one of the most, like, powerful things we can do as humans. It can be incredibly life-affirming and enlivening, as you'll say. And it opens you up to new aspects of yourself, to what's possible, shifts you out of that kind of I'm following the script of life type energy. It can be really, really fun. And, you know, as coaches, we get to do this work with our clients, right? We get to witness their changes, and how fun that can be. So I wanted to just kind of share with you and kind of bring this back to a kind of evidence basis, because I think that can be super helpful, especially if we're talking about giant wooden elephants. Prochaska and De Clemente's model has been used, like, all over the place. And it really does try and sort of simplify this very complicated process of changing. What I think is super helpful, so hopefully you've all sort of seen this in it, they just talk about the six stages of change, that we go from pre-contemplation to relapse, or what they call relapse, right? What I call being human. And you just sort of spiral, you upward spiral. And the idea is, I think, for us to be aware of is who we might be in contact with and what might be helpful for them to hear from us, right? So for folks who are in this pre-contemplation and contemplation stage, they are usually either don't have any intention of changing anything about their world, or they're aware that they have some kind of problem or challenge or something they do want to change, but they have no, and they're not committing to any kind of action. They're just in that, oh, that's an idea, right? That might be nice kind of thing. I think these are the people in your audience, in your sphere of influence, folks that you're connected to. And I think they often underestimate what they're capable of. They don't, folks who are in this stage don't really believe that they can do it, right? And so part of I think our job is to see, these are your prospective clients, right? These are folks who, if they hear the right messages at the right time, are going to be like, yeah, I do want to make some change. I don't even maybe know what it is yet, but I do want to do something. So these are the folks that we're showing up for, usually in our newsletters, in our social media, in the conversations we might be having with people, where we're just sharing what we do, how we help, what's possible. These are really important people, because this is where our next client is going to come from, right? So I'm always thinking about, you know, what do you need to hear before you might decide to work with me? What might be helpful? It's often kind of education material or entertainment material. It's that kind of like, how can I help you to feel like this is possible? When folks move into this next phase of sort of preparation and action, they usually, this is your new clients, right? And so part of our job here is to kind of help them to see what is possible, right? They want to take some action. They want to invest in taking action. So, you know, the kinds of things that we would be using to work with them are, you know, the archetypes, the life map, protective belief stuff, like the belief biography, mapping their beliefs and doing a belief buster, looking at experiments and maybe a vision board, joy bucket type stuff, you know, envisioning what's possible. And they're the clients that are like, I kind of understand what I need to do, but I maybe don't believe that I can do it yet. And so part of our work with folks here is to get them to keep experimenting, right? To see that whatever they choose as a goal, or even if it's not a goal, if it's just the change they want to make, that the sense of growth that comes from continuously engaging in the process of change, of preparation and action, right? Planning, understanding, making sense of what's going on, taking new action, trying new things out, keeping experimenting. The other thing that we're doing for everyone who's in that pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation and action, what we want to do is kind of model what a healthy self looks and sounds like. You know, imperfectly, humanly. But we're also, as Jane mentioned earlier, that's where the unconditional positive regard comes in. You know, wherever you're at, it's perfect. I'll meet you there. Right? You don't have to be ready. You don't have to be anything other than who you are. And as they start to have experiences where, oh, this is possible, I am doing something different, I tried something else out, you know, using other approaches like, you know, meaning making and trying on the, you know, working out what the protectors are and trying out boundaries, looking at what's okay and what's not okay, how they want to advocate for themselves, how they make decisions, maybe trying a courage-based plan. Right. All of that, all of those approaches are hugely helpful to folks who are in that preparation and action stage. And in the action maintenance relapse type stage, you know, that's where they probably know a bit more about what their protector is and how that show or protectors are and how they show up. They're kind of have usually made some changes or had a sort of shift in their thinking. They're starting to access more of their healthy adult self and their resources, and they're likely to also fall back into old patterns of behavior. And usually there's some meaning making that goes on there, like, oh, unless I'm completely like rigidly on myself, then I'm always going to fall back to who I really am, right? And so part of our job, I think, with these clients who are usually longer term clients, is that process of no, you remember, you have these tools, you have these resources available to you. Usually when people come to a relapse of, and I don't really love this word to be fair, but usually when people relapse, they've done something that reminds them of their old self, and there's sometimes some judgment and shame around that. But I think this can also be a huge space of growth, because you start to see how far you've come and how uncomfortable what used to be your daily life has now become really uncomfortable. And so the desire to shift back into a place of feeling healthier, feeling like you're making good choices, where you kind of have that sense that you're on your own team. That's often the great lesson that comes from relapse. And of course, some people kind of go, oh, I can't sustain this, you know, I can't sustain the change. And so they will kind of go back to pre-contemplation and go, oh, well, there's no point in me changing my behavior. Sometimes that will happen. It's if we can get folks back into that relapse to action loop, relapse to maybe preparation, then action loop, it helps them to see, oh no, I've come so far. It's why I often sort of think that this work is more like a labyrinth, right, that we're walking around. That even when we feel like we're in the same place as we were, actually we're in a different place. We have more learning, more self-knowledge, more self-awareness. So what I'm hoping you'll see from, particularly from the second half of that module 10 workbook, is how you can take these tools and approaches and create a coaching offer that can be quite long-term if you wish it to be. You can work with someone for, you know, a longish period of time if that feels good to you, and you'll always be uncovering and helping them to figure stuff out. This also means that you can do this in groups as well, right? That you can actually work with folks and they get the benefit of seeing other people at different stages and hearing how they are going, what is working for them, and they're not as kind of emotionally invested in the outcome because it's happening to someone else. But the second half of that module 10 workbook is really a kind of like, if you're wanting to specialize in self-belief coaching, here's how you can create a sort of offer that is deeply supportive of your clients and also reflects where they're at. And it also means that it will help you to see, oh, and if I'm a self-belief coach working with business owners or creatives or whoever, that you can see how you might translate this work for your particular client group. So, any questions or shares or things people would like to ask or offer at this point? We have some time. Yeah, Anka.
I just wanted to share that this, like, I'm an American personal trainer, and this model is used in the personal trainer thing, and they have different time frames, and one is 6 months. So if somebody is 6 months doing a new like workout routine or whatever healthy habit routine, they it's like a rocket. Like the starting the rocket is difficult, but then as the plane, but as it flies, it's much easier. And I like this, like that there is a power and momentum, so that people also can know, hey, you, of course you fall back down. That's normal. That's not a surprise, but you have momentum already. So it's easier. And we can remind them of that one always. It's a beautiful thing to know.
Yeah, completely. I think that's the thing I found is, and why I think any model like this is, you know, it's oversimplified, doesn't quite work for every scenario, all of that jazz, but it is super useful. I think particularly for me in, you know, acknowledging this pre-contemplation stage where you've got a ton of people who might be watching your work, lurking outside your sphere, but they are in that place of, there's something here for me. I don't know why I'm connected to you, but there's something about this that is interesting to me. And just never doubt that. Like, never doubt that there are people around you who are interested in your work and who are looking for support. But they may need help finding the words to articulate what it is that they need from you. So if we can reflect that back, like the more we get to know our clients, know where they are, what they're thinking, feeling, saying to themselves, to others, what they're doing or not doing, this is how we can do that work of helping them make a decision to come work with us. Yeah, Jane.
I'm just thinking about that, the relapse, and the gap between relapse and pre-contemplation. When I did my master's, my research dissertation was autoethnography, so a study of self, in relation to self-care and burnout. And I hadn't come across this at all, but I, from my own work, I had a positive cycle, an upward cycle, but also a downward cycle. And for me, the key question was, if you're in the downward cycle, what is going to help shift it into the positive cycle? So when people relapse, what are the key things that will help them get into pre-contemplation or into back into action? Or even when people are in pre-contemplation but just feel that they have not got the resources to move forward, that seems to be the really key thing for me.
Yeah, agree.
What's the answer, Seth?
Yeah, I wish I had it. If only. Go ahead. Sounds like you've got
I was just going to say, in relation to, because my dissertation was around writing, creative writing, but for me it seemed to be in awareness, in absolutely slowing down and cultivating awareness, and then finding a way to, well, I'm probably just repeating everything that you tell us as well, but from that state of very mindful awareness, finding a way forward that is really, really small and slow. So safety, finding safety and dealing with stress.
Yeah. Agree. I think as well, it'll depend on the person. What you'll probably find is that you've got, and I guess I think it's really helpful to imagine your ideal client. I think that's a great place to start. I think what tends to happen over time is you get to see that there are sort of different, slightly different flavors of your client, who might be at different stages or just need different things. They maybe have different levels of awareness, what have you. And so I think it's important to kind of talk to all of them in various ways. And they may need different things. Like for some people, the idea of sitting in mindful awareness will be like torture, right? But for others, it's like, can you make a list of all the shit that feels good to you and have that on hand? That's going to help you. So I think it's that kind of thing, like, is to recognize that our clients might be different to us, might need different things from us. Who are those people that we work with? What are the different things that they require from us? I don't know if that helps you, Jane, but yeah. Okay.
I just wanted to add the word longing. I always feel longing gets a little bit under what we know or what we defend against, and it connects to our inner truth.
Yeah. You know, I think that's something that a lot of us find kind of tricky to be honest with ourselves about. Like, what are our unmet longings? I think it does require quite a lot of self-awareness or a willingness to entertain the idea that maybe there are things that we don't have that we wish we did have, or, you know, because we can make it, because immediately we acknowledge the thing that either is on the downward spiral in Jane's world, or it's our longings in your world, Anka, and then we make up a story about that. We make meaning from that, about who we are, why we haven't got it, and all that sort of stuff. And it's almost like if we can encourage people to have a little pause in the middle between the acknowledgement and then the story, to just go, okay, that is true. That's true for me. You know, I don't have the business I want, or I don't have the relationship I want. I don't have the financial freedom that I want. I don't have the body I want. Like, these are all things that are tricky to acknowledge for ourselves, right? Notice that they're all kind of all or nothing. And when you can go into, there's this thing I really want more of in my relationship. Or I wonder how I can make more money from this business that I've created. I wonder how I'm going to do that. I wonder what options I have. Like, when you flip it into, and it's not like a positive thinking spin, it's more of a, what's a more helpful way to contemplate this? You can acknowledge the truth without it turning into then the downward spiral of the story and the meaning making. it becomes more about, let's engage the healthy self to help us figure this out. Yeah, Hannah.
I have a question. So I was applying this to me right now. So I'm like an inner change factor with regards to like health and exercise and food. I've had like a bit, like I've been a bit revamped. So I'd say I'm in like the maintenance phase, but it's starting to feel inspiring. And it's just, I don't know, I'm kind of curious about like you being in that phase. And it's like, I'm not going to relapse, but equally things maybe start feeling like a bit harder when you haven't got that like big, I don't know, like excitement or like newness or, yeah, so I'm just curious about the maintenance part, because I guess a lot of the things will change in an ideal world when we think about change, but I really have to change and then keep it at that point. And that's actually a lot of work, maintenance sometimes. So I'm just curious about zooming in on that part.
Well, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because maintenance to me is usually quite peaceful. Because it's kind of innate. At that point, I've committed to it. It's not, I'm not having to make decisions about it all the time. So I think it's really interesting to pay attention to that. Oh, this feels like hard work. Because that suggests to me that there is some kind of resistance playing out. So if I was coaching you, Hannah, one of the things I would be asking is, how can you reword your goal so it gives you more peace and freedom? And reduces that maintenance feeling resisty. So just that idea of I'm on a bit of a health kick, right? I've got my focus on my health and well-being. If you can phrase that in a way that feels really peaceful and kind of not as hard work, where it kind of allows that creativity to come in. One of my favorite kind of goals is cherishing my body, right? So when I think about cherishing my body, that comes with, what fun supplements can I experiment with? Like, how can I move my body a couple of times a week? What do I want to eat today? Like, it's much more about nourishment than it is about discipline, if you get where I'm going. So one of the ways that you can play with phrasing your goal is to think about the sort of like a almost like a word cloud of how you want to feel. So if you think about this general goal of your health, and then think about how you want to feel around that. If it's things like nourished, sustainable, strong, I'm just plucking words out of the air. And then you start to see like, oh, okay, what kind of things could I add into my plan that would help me feel those ways that are quite flexible, right? Because when it feels like hard work, it's usually because we're doing more than what our bodies want to do, and we're socially conditioned, right, to push our bodies to the absolute limit, otherwise it doesn't count. To me, that's all or nothing thinking, right? So it's like, well, maybe you could stretch for 10 minutes today. Amazing. Oh, that feels good, right? Like, so you're starting to pay attention not just to what's on the list, but how it feels in your body. How's that landing, Hannah?
Yeah, it's made me think actually I'm probably still in the action phase, because it's just like everything is still taking quite a lot of conscious thought. Yeah. So if the maintenance phase is meant to be like to feel more easy and just like embedded, I think maybe I'm still in action because I'm still like consciously changing things and then not like my automatic neural pathway. So I think that's why it's been inspiring, because it's like, oh, it's a lot of
you're having to make decisions all the time. Yeah.
So maybe it's not, I kind of thought maybe I thought I was a bit far along, but maybe it's still an action process of like I'm still like things are changing and the way I view things. And, yeah.
And, you know, it's that thing, isn't it, where usually this kind of goal is quite values-led. It's like, oh, I want to get to the end of every day and think, you know, did I take care of my body today in whatever way? And if I can, for me, if I can come up with a couple of examples where I'm like, yep, took care of my body today, you know, made sure this happened, that happened, then it's like, cool, done. Tick in the box, you know. Start again tomorrow, kind of thing. But at this, I think when you know that you're not consciously making choices, it's just sort of like what you do, then you know you're in that place of maintenance. Yeah. Yeah. It's like you reach a new level of commitment.
Yeah.
Great question. Anyone else got anything they want to ask, share? Please know this is not the last opportunity either. Cool.
I have a stupid question, maybe, which is not related to the module today. I just had to miss last week as well. And for certification, you need 10 live sessions, right? And I completely am not sure how many I had. How can I, did you have some kind of records of attendance or, because I know I missed definitely three for sure.
So we will definitely cover this in the certification call.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And I think we updated the guidance before attendance was clear. So please don't worry too much about that. I mean, okay. Totally understand. Some people are going to miss a couple of sessions. It's all good, right? So don't worry too much about that, Verena. It's more for me. I'm not so big on the presenteeism. It's more, did you get what you needed? You know, do you feel like you've learned enough to be able to work with clients in a way that you feel competent and they feel helped? And there's more of the certification criteria that helps to determine that. So
okay.
So yeah. Good. Not a stupid question at all. Great. Cool. Okay, folks. Well, we'll meet next week for our closing, and I'll send you out some preparation questions for you to think about so that we can all contribute. And don't come along to that, especially even if you have a little bit of wobbliness around endings. It can be a great way to just sort of make new meaning around endings for that. Yeah, I will see you all next week. Okay. All right, loves. Take care. Thank you for today.